Witches and mortals seldom do mix, but when mixed marriage is on the cards, insanity pursues with the classic 60s sitcom Bewitched, with your co-hosts, Vicky Ray, Rod Labby, and Keith Chandler. Witches have never been so exposed before.
Hello, welcome to Literary License Podcast, and it's Bewitched Week, where we're discussing Season 2, Episodes 9 through 12. And this is the end of our Season 4 Bewitched episodes. Of course, next week in Season 5, when we do next month, Bewitched will be expanding to 8 episodes. But since we're in Season 4, we'll be only covering 4 for our very last Season 4 Bewitched. And so let's see who's with us today. We have Vicky Ray. Hello, Vicky.
Hey, everybody.
And Jesse Fultz is with us. Hello, Jesse.
Hey, how's it going?
And before we get started, let's find out what we've been up to, starting with you, Vix. What have you been up to since last time we spoke to you?
Not a lot. I'm telling everybody, I've been living a really boring life the last 2 weeks. I've been fighting off summer colds and just trying to catch up on the house stuff, things that do around the house, little projects here and there. I did watch that movie, though, you told me about, The Boy Behind the Door. That was intense. That was really intense. That's the first movie that I really literally bit my nails off. I mean, literally, because I had no clue how this was going to end. And it was so good. Was it on Netflix? Shudder. Shudder. Yeah. It was on Shudder. It was really, really worth watching. I really enjoyed it. And then I watched this weird movie called The Devil Below, where these guys were miners. And they had a mining accident. Apparently, they dug really deep into the earth. It was kind of lame, but it was kind of fun at the same time. I like the actors. That's what I liked about it. But Asher's got me watching this Destination Fear thing lately. I get such a kick out of these guys because they scream like little bitches. They go ghost hunting and stuff, and they go to the worst places they can, and all these guys are just screaming like little girls, you know? I should say that. But they just scream. I mean, they're just squealing like kids. But me and Asher get a kick out of it. He might be my new ghost hunting partner. Asher's interested. But we'll see what happens. His mother probably would never allow me to take him to the portals of hell and back. But, you know, we'll see what happens. But not a whole lot going on. It's just hot and muggy and all that other good stuff here in Texas. So what about you guys?
What about yourself, Jesse? What have you been up to?
Visiting museums, going to the city.
We're getting so cosmopolitan in our old age.
Oh, so I actually had a Cosmo last night.
Oh, you did?
Whatever. I actually did. I know.
You had a Cosmo. Get a Boilermaker. Yeah. Grow some hair on your nads.
No, I don't drink a lot, so I just.
I don't anymore
everything.
Either, man. Don't feel bad.
I just try lots of different things because I don't know what I like yet. I mean, I guess I kind of like Jaeger or something sometimes. Or
what is it?
Like a good IPA. Jägermeister.
Oh, you like that? Jaeger bombs.
Yeah. Absinthe. Well,
shit's expensive. That's $100.
Yeah, I know. It's hard to find. Like the only
it's
one
hard
that
to find the real absinthe.
It's true. It's true. I think you have to import it from like different countries if you want
from
really
UK.
Good.
You get it from the UK. They got some
good stuff, but
it's expensive.
The only thing they have around here is like I don't know the Marilyn Manson absinthe. I think they have that.
I've never tried that.
The local one. I haven't either. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why I'm hesitant to try it. Maybe because I think there's some kind of like dark magic in it. I don't know.
Probably trip balls on it or something.
Something. I don't know. But yeah, I like a good IPA too sometimes. German beer. I don't know. Like authentic German beer. I had one expensive German beer years ago on my buddy's birthday because he wanted to go to this really expensive restaurant. And that beer was like totally different than anything I've ever tasted since.
And a spoon up
but it was
it.
Really good
German beer the yeah. Real German beer is kind of thick and dark and-
oh yeah that's true it is kind of syrupy it's similar to Jaeger actually except not as sweet but it does have kind of a darker yeah it's definitely like it's like the color of molasses I guess but yeah it was good I was really impressed with that actually and I haven't found anything since that's remotely like that but some of them taste very floral Kind of like kombucha or something, but I like kombucha too, but that's not like technically.
Kombucha, my daughter, I buy one every so often because she says it's good for me. So
it's, they're good. Like the, if you get the GT brand, those are the best by far. Because it doesn't just taste like vinegar. If you get any other brand, sometimes, even if it's flavored, all you get is
going down, though. You know?
It can. It,
it's really, what's the word I want to use? Bubbly. I mean, yeah, it's really sharp when it comes demented. To the bubbles. It's got lots of gas. Lots and lots of gas. There's what Italians would say.
Lots of gas, yeah.
You get your, you want your water with gas or no gas? I, it took me a while to figure out what the Italians were talking about, but...
Yeah, so it's been, you know, that and some art stuff. I mean, mostly, like, I've been sanding a chair, finishing up some furniture, because I'm trying to get, I don't know, I'm not, I've never done any of these things before, and I'm also trying to experiment with spray paint, and I'm beginning, I've been spending a lot of money on, like, spray paint.
I know somebody
lately,
that makes really good money refurbing old wooden furniture.
Really?
Yes, I do.
I might try that sometime, maybe. I don't know. It's a bit infuriating, because I don't know if I have the right sanding stuff, so it's really difficult to get in, like,
the more rustic, the more it sells, you know, like the blues, like this kind of color furniture kind of thing, you know. I'm not talking about people love that shit
anyway. What about you, Keith?
I haven't really been up too much. I've been ill this week, but saying that, Back for Blood has just gone gold status, a million copies pre-sold, so that's good. The open beta is out this weekend on Xbox, PlayStation, and across computers, so you can play it for free for one whole weekend. The only thing that we would suggest, though, that if you do play it free, at the end of your quest, the end of the level, after you finish playing the first time, there will be a QR code. Scan that with your phone, and we're looking for all your feedback about how ways that, that this game can be improved. But so far, it's doing, yeah, so a little bit of that. Watched a little bit of telly. Because I've been ill, I've been feeling sorry for myself and watching rom-coms and wishing that I was in those rom-coms. Obviously, I'm a bit delicate at the moment emotionally, but I'm back to normal. So I'm, you know, I'm the asshole that basically I was before I got ill. So I'm back to being that person. But besides that, yeah, not a lot. Sorting out season 5, got the season 5 new opening credits sorted out. We have some new regular co-hosts joining us, which is quite exciting. More of that in the next couple of weeks, and they'll be out in our newsletter, and you'll be introduced to those people. And other than that, that's it, really. So
we've gotten so exciting in our old age. COVID has turned us into boring people over the last year.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, that brings us to Bewitched, Season 2, Episode 9, first episode, And Then I Wrote. Samantha is writing a play for the American Civil War Centennial Pageant, but she's having some writer's block. And Dora suggests that she materializes the characters in front of her so that she can get a better idea of what to write. The problem is that they now materialize whenever Samantha thinks about them. Samantha has to figure out a way to make her vivid imagination not so vivid. She gets some help from her characters. And this was filmed July 21st, 1965. So, Jesse, what are your thoughts about And Then I Wrote?
I thought it was really, really funny. I forgot how funny this episode was. I mean, this is one of my favorite seasons. So all of these episodes I think that we watched were really good, in my opinion. I'm trying to remember. I just thought it was funny, like, when she was in the office thinking while Darren was off talking to that, what the hell is that doctor's name? Doctor something more? Doctor, what was the doctor's name?
The psychiatrist.
Yeah, doctor. I always wanted to say Strathmore because that's the, in Dark Shadows, there's this chick that said, Dr. Strathmore, or Captain Strathmore got me a compact. But no, it was something with more at the end, but I don't remember. But anyway, yeah, it was funny because Samantha was sitting there thinking about the play, wondering what to do. And then all of a sudden, like, everyone's just showing up. Or Gladys. At this point, I don't even think Samantha really bats an eyelash from Gladys.
Was it just me or was Gladys much more intrusive and snoopy in this block? It's just she's always got a glass in her hand to borrow a cup of sugar and look in their window.
Yeah, I don't need any sugar. I got plenty at home.
Yeah, I mean,
she totally admits it.
My sugar again,
also, she just keeps thinking of stuff and it happens, right? I guess she just thinks of the Civil War people. And
well, I also have to the forward thinking of this, because I thought it was really interesting when basically Red Indian, which we call the Native Americans today, but Red Indian back in the 60s.
Yeah, definitely a wide actor.
And someone says something to him, and he goes, how come you don't have me speaking like, you know, like they had me go, like, oh, white men talk with
cows.
Because I didn't want to stereotype you. I don't know, you know, think about 19, this is quite a forward way of thinking back in this time.
Basically. No, I noticed that too. A lot of those quips could have been used in, you know, like an episode today, because they were kind of addressing a lot of those things, like things that you would regularly hear on TV now. It's very common to hear stuff like that on an episode of something, because they do involve a lot of those kinds of political correctness in a lot of shows now. I was surprised at how much they did that too. I totally noticed that, especially when in the beginning he came on the scene, and who was it? Was it Samantha that asked him why he didn't speak that way, or
yeah,
who was it?
I don't think it was Samantha. Because Samantha said no. She goes, I didn't want to stereotype you. She didn't use those words. She used the word.
Was it one of the other characters that she created? Because no one knew about that.
Yeah, the Southern Belle. You got the Confederate general, and
yes,
who's the other guy?
And the Indian.
That was talk about stereotypical. It was, you know, but the thing is, I always think you want to look for something that would really piss off people. Look for old Westerns, because they talk about stereotyping the, you know, the American natives.
But I thought it was really interesting that this episode actually, basically took that and basically addressed that issue. And I thought that was, you know.
What, the general or the
Indian? No, with the American
Indian. The Indian.
It's the way you spoke. And someone goes to American Indian, how come you're not speaking this way? And she goes, he goes, and he thanks her for not stereotyping him, because he speaks like a normal person. And she goes, oh,
that's true. That's right.
Well, it's crazy, because I'm surprised that with that forward thinking, even as far back as the 60s, you know, as evident, you know, they were still dealing with that like in the 90s. They're probably still dealing with it now, because I know with, you know, when Disney did Pocahontas, there was a lot of people who were upset by what
I loved
that movie
Pocahontas.
I thought it was beautiful
animation.
Some Native Americans loved it, others didn't. They thought it wasn't.
See how you could draw the conclusion that it was disrespectful, because I didn't. I thought it was very spiritual animation.
Okay, a lot of people thought so, but a lot of people also didn't think so. So it was a mixed bag. From what I read some kind of, or no, I watched a documentary about it,
I think what people found the problem with Pocahontas is that to Disney-fy a real life person, because basically what happens is that her and John Smith end up happily ever after. But the problem basically
And she was depicted as a mature, probably 20s to 30 year old woman who was very,
she was a 12 year old girl.
Appealing.
She was a 12 year old girl.
All Disney princesses.
She was very sexual. And
they sexualize everybody.
With Pocahontas. I would say she's probably the most sexy Disney character.
Yeah, I mean, what about Aladdin?
You know? No, but I think the problem with Pocahontas is that because it's a real person, and I don't think it was the way that the Indian tribe was described. That wasn't the problem with Pocahontas. The problem with Pocahontas, the reason why there was problems with it, is that this is a real life person. It hadn't anything to do with how old they depicted her. The problem what happened to Pocahontas is basically she goes to England. John Smith brings her to England and turns her into a prostitute.
Basically,
that's the problem with the story. And what they she basically became this, and then for that they fell in love, and then she became like this Disney princess. Well, the thing is like, you know, you're taking a real life person here and you're basically fantasizing what this person's story is. And that's what they had a problem with. They didn't have a problem with the way that, you know, showing the Indian tribe or anything like that, or the way they spoke or anything like that. They didn't even have a problem with a Broadway Jewish actress being the singing voice for her. That wasn't the problem. The problem basically is that if you're going to tell the story of Pocahontas, you might as well tell the whole story, that basically this woman put her life in front of her, put her life before her father, sort of thing, to protect these people coming to her land.
Right.
Which is a beautiful story, but then what happened to her afterwards is the tragedy of the story, sort of thing. And that's where they had the problem with Pocahontas. It had nothing to do with the way that the Indian tribe was presented or anything like that, which, to be honest, I can kind of see the reason, you know. It'd be like,
she died in Gravesend, United Kingdom. That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's a bit like
buried in St. George's Church.
It's been like Bessel Horace in Texas. You know, if you take that, it's a musical with Dolly Parton and Burt Reynolds. It's a true story. Now, the end of the Broadway show basically is that, you know, Miss Mona and all, you know, they don't get together. She leads a horrible life. She, you know, she dies alone and she loses everything. In the movie production, her and Burt Reynolds get together at the end and live happily ever after.
Right.
And you know, the thing is, you know, it's one thing if you're doing a fantasy or something like Pretty Woman. Pretty Woman works fine. But if that was the true story of a real prostitute, you might not want to depictiate that, because what you're doing is you're mixing fact and fiction a little bit. You know, it's a bit like, I remember when Pretty Woman came out, and I remember so many 13-year-old girls said that they wanted to be Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman, which is like, you want to be a prostitute.
I like that movie.
What?
I like that movie.
It's a great movie, but I'm sitting there saying, but it is a bit problematic when you look at when the time it came out, and 13 and 14 year old girls are watching it, and this is what they want to be when they grow up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a great movie. It's, you know, I love it. I'm not saying anything against it, but it does, it can throw up problems in certain situations, I guess.
But if I remember correctly, I think another issue that they brought up was that there weren't, I think it was partly to do with the depiction of indigenous people, but also that indigenous people weren't heavily involved in the background of creating it or something. I might have that wrong. Just from the documentary I watched, I don't know if that's
true. I don't know how many Native Americans.
I don't remember, but
I'm not, I don't think there's probably a lot of Native Americans working in animation.
Yeah, probably not, but and then they did bring up Moana as a comparison, because the two movies are very similar. They did actually more heavily involve indigenous people, but there were complaints about how Disney depicts indigenous people, like in Lilo and Stitch, Pocahontas, Moana. Like they listed that. But honestly, I think they were being nitpicky, because you can't. I feel like there are certain people you can just never make happy, even if you try to do or abide by their suggestions, because I think they did involve people who gave their input about the music, about what they did.
They also had a Confederate soldier, not a Yankee soldier. So I was wondering, you know, were people more receptive to the South back then, or, you know, with everybody?
I guess.
I also think that that again is something. I think this episode was trying to paint. I think there was like an undercurrent about stereotyping as well, because.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Because for him, it's like, I'm a Confederate soldier. She goes, "Oh, I'm gonna take off your beard and mustache." Oh, you can't do that. I'm a Confederate soldier. People have an expectation of what that is, and it's the beard and mustache. And they also did something similar with the because she was a Southern belle, but then they turned into a. From Pennsylvania, so she's a Northern Yankee girl by the end of it, and about what that meant, they addressed that stereotype as well a little bit. So it was,
well, he said she's a Yankee or something like that, and then when he saw how pretty she was, it didn't really matter that she was a Yankee.
Yeah, but also that that she should be demure and then answerable to a guy, and then she ends up becoming Fort Worth and a mind of her own. So I think this episode, even though it had like this backdrop about the writer's block and make it kind of cute and kind of fun, I think there was a message that they were bringing through that I found those
definitely. And they did a very good job with it, I thought, because it wasn't taking like, you know, something and drilling you in the head with it. It was very
subtle.
It was subtle. It was subtle, but it was also done with like care. You know, it wasn't done with a negative approach to the audience or the watchers or the viewers, whatever. So I think that's the best way to go. Like, if you do have a message, especially if it is, you know, somewhat political, you shouldn't try to drill your audience in their head and basically tell them that they're horrible. You need to kind of do it lovingly with care and just educate like you care about people, like Pocahontas was trying to do to John Smith in that movie.
She did try to help the settlers.
You know, and you can sing to your audience.
I think she died of tuberculosis or pneumonia or something, I think.
She got like pneumonia or something. Whatever illness she had caused the pneumonia, I believe. Because of the, I don't think she was used to the weather.
In Great Britain, probably not.
I can imagine the dirt and the noise and the pollution and everything like that. I mean, going from like living in a forest and living in a really crowded city can't be good.
Yeah, looking out actually, on the street. Watch out below.
You know what's funny? I recently watched, I know this is a little off topic, but I recently watched the second Pocahontas film, and that's where she goes to London. I don't know if any of you have seen it, but it reminded me so much of the 2017 Wonder Woman movie. It was so similar, so ridiculously similar. The sequel to the cartoon Pocahontas movie is very similar to the 2017 Wonder Woman film.
Yeah.
If you watch them, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Because they're both in London. They're both foreign princesses who are kind of navigating, and they're getting dressed by a fun, pudgy British woman.
Right, right.
And all of these other things. They go to balls, galas, whatever you want to call them. And they're very strong, independent women who aren't afraid to tell people what's on their mind. And I don't know. If you watch the two, you'll totally see all the comparisons. They're so similar.
I mean, I think another thing I found interesting about this episode is that there was no negativity painted in any direction either. Like, Darren didn't go off the rails during this episode.
No, that was very satisfying.
Well, he kind of, there was a dynamic going on there. He was kind of irritated. Because she got him involved in all this. The bedroom scene?
Like the bedroom scene or something? No. No, the beginning. That's right. Yeah, in the beginning when she made a promise that Darren would be involved, which I thought was a little careless of her to do. I was like, why'd you do that? Like, what do you expect, Samantha? Like, you can't make promises without consulting your husband first.
Just before that, she talked about how busy Darren is all the time. He works all the time. He's never home.
Yeah. What made her think Darren would be able to write a whole playwright? I don't understand. And I thought it was kind of immature.
It wasn't painted, and I mean, it wasn't. The dynamics are a bit different. You had Gladys going a bit crazy, like we normally do, sort of thing.
Of course.
But even the way that they approach the craziness, like going to the psychiatrist and those, you know, just the way everything's dealt with. Everything was dealt slightly different than what we've seen previously.
No, it's true. I think that can be said with all of these episodes. There's something more fresh about the episodes that I watched, and it was such a relief because I felt like I was struggling with some of the episodes from last season towards the end or the middle or whatever.
Well, there was a couple that were a little iffy, though.
Yes, but with this, I was, you know, with this block, I was very, like, I loved every episode. It was very interesting, very clever, and they did involve more of, like, the whole witchcraft thing. It was more lighthearted and things like that. And with this one, I don't know, I think one of my favorite scenes in this episode was when Darren was sleeping and Samantha's like, I think she's wide awake, thinking of the play, and then the characters start going behind like their headboard and like telling her what should happen next, and then Darren wakes up and kind of like he tries to go back to sleep, and then all of a sudden he's aware of like everyone there. And yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. And then she sat up and was like listening to them, very fascinated by what was, you know, gonna happen next. That was one of my favorite scenes. I thought that was really funny.
And I like that every time her subconscious was taking over and they would appear, then he got to kiss her and he disappeared. Yeah. I thought that was quite good. But I also like the way that it was actually the characters that had to actually come out with the plot, the story. Samantha couldn't do the plot. They had to tell her what the plot was, sort of thing. So
yeah, that was cool. I thought it was clever how they needed to finish the very thing that they were trying to avoid, which is letting them tell the story in order for them to go back and disappear and, I don't know, go back into subconscious, I guess, or get stuck in the script. I don't know. I don't know how that works. That was a bit confusing, but still, it was very, it reminded me of, like, I don't know, like a vintage story from like the 1960s that you'd read to a kid before bed or something. It was very cutesy and very entertaining.
We also learned something else about the Bewitched world as well, is that normally when they bring someone forward, they're normally like coming from their time or they're a real person.
True.
But now we know that they can bring people up from just out of their own make-believe world, and they can actually make that person a living person in the real world, which is quite interesting. Because, you know, before it's like if they popped anything in, whether it was a doorknob or whether it was a bounty or whatever, they always like taking them from wherever they were and then poof into Samantha's home or wherever. We knew that they were a real living person somewhere before they got popped here, or if it was a stop sign or a traffic light that was actually coming from a street somewhere.
When you bring that up, that's actually kind of confusing, because it's like, why would they need to have done that if they could just bring something into thin air? Like, why did Endora take a street sign from like Britain or various other places in the real world when she could have just, you know, summoned one up from her own imagination? I wonder. I mean, I know it's a sitcom, so not a lot of thought goes into world building, but still you have to wonder.
But it might be because Samantha is actually writing about these people, and either to write something that you have to breathe life into the characters that you're writing about, maybe?
Is it because she's pregnant? Okay. They just pop up every time she thinks about them? Or did they ever say why she was having that little Aunt Clara
deja vu? I think it has to do with if you're a writer, and I think, you know, at the end of the day, a writer writes this stuff as well. With writers in the past, don't they always say that, you know, that when they start writing like their books or whatever like that, they let their characters speak to them, and their characters suggest the path that they're going to take while they're writing for them, so the character becomes a real person for them? Or isn't it like J.K. Rowling that sit there and said that when Voldemort dies, but when Dumbledore dies, should have read it by now if you haven't. Screw you. Right. Anyway, but when Dumbledore, she said that she actually cried when she was writing his death, sort of thing.
Wow, because that's intense.
When I look at this episode of Bewitched, maybe it has to do with the lines along that. That basically is that, you know, if you're popping things back and forth, that basically you're, you know, they're not living things; they're just things, sort of thing. But the with this character, because they're imaginary characters, is something that she's actually breathing life into while she's writing them and thinking about them, and she's breathing life into these characters, maybe. So even though they're not real, but in a way they are real to her.
Yeah, but they're talking to her as though they are figments of her imagination. So it is kind of funny that way, you know. Yeah.
And they're fully aware of the fact that they're figments of her imagination, which I also found kind of endearing, I guess, because they weren't, you know, sometimes I feel like when I've seen movies like this where there's a similar plot, these characters just kind of are blank slates, and then the character kind of has to teach them how to behave, but these characters are fully aware of the fact that they come from her mind, and that she has to be the one to kind of give them something to do, because otherwise they're just standing there. But they can give their thoughts and opinions on what they would like, or suggestions, which I also thought was interesting. So they have their own personalities despite being figments of her imagination.
Well, an interesting thing I guess I can probably add to this is that scripts that I've had written that I haven't produced, I can give you the character list of those, and I can tell you what they look like, what they listen to, what they like to eat, everything about that character. Even those characters never lived, but in my mind, I know exactly what they look like. I can tell you everything about that character. Though you can tell me about people I work with, I couldn't give you that much information about. I could tell you people I've known for like over 40 years, and I couldn't give you as much detail as I can give you about the characters I've written about. It's just kind of bizarre world sort of thing.
You know, I would have liked to actually have seen the play. I would have loved to have that be the end where, and maybe potentially even see these same characters play out this role and have her try to explain to certain people where these actors came from or something, because they want to use them for another play. I was hoping for something like that, but that didn't happen. I thought that would have been really cool to have seen the actual like end of that play.
I have to say that once they reenacted what the plot would be, it didn't sound like it was going to be great.
No, I agree. I agreed. I thought it was very weak, and it was like, so they all just shoot each other and die, and she, and why, I don't know. I didn't, the choice of music was kind of corny, and I mean, it was very corny overall. It was very, it wasn't even cliche. It was just very, it was very dumb. But what can you expect? It's Samantha's first time writing a play, right? So I don't know. It is still her imagination.
She can't be good at everything.
She's good at everything she does.
Yeah. But it was still would have been interesting to have seen the play, or like just even if it was just showing like the end and people applauding and enjoying it and potentially seeing the same people act as those characters. Maybe that could have been the way that they went back into imagination. If they acted them out, that would have been cool.
Well, it must have been successful because, I mean, it does end with her getting another job writing a vaudeville show or something.
That's true. Oh, my gosh.
And she gets the two vaudeville guys that are showed up. She thinks of them. And you know what I noticed? That Gladys is like they're caring for her feelings is going down the shitter. Completely in this whole plot.
They don't care anymore. No, they don't. They don't even try to explain to her what it could be instead. They just do it in front of her. Like, so I'm like the audacity for Samantha, how she's just kind of standing there acting like she's not even there thinking about the vaudeville. They're right behind performing. She's just totally lost in her own little world. And Gladys is like, and then she just runs off and goes.
It's been like that
every episode. I know, it's so funny. Like the faces, the subtle noises, the grunts. Yeah. if this was an actual like TV show now or something, when they were trying to actually world build and be continuous, she would definitely be seeing either a regular psychiatrist or she would just be in the nut house right now. That would actually be interesting, even though it would be so sad though, because she actually is seeing these things. And I thought another funny scene, I always thought this was funny when I was younger. After she sees the psychiatrist, she tells Darren and Samantha, get a hobby.
Yeah.
It's all in my mind. Yeah. That part was so funny. And then when the doctor, when he's saying it, he says it really fast and then she says it really slow. There's something about that interaction I found just hysterical, because he's like, it's all in my mind. And she's like, it's all in my mind. And they're just repeating each other back and forth. That was so hysterical. I know me and my brother thought that was funny when we were growing up as kids.
You gotta feel sorry for her.
I know. I do feel sorry. Everyone's just treating her like nothing's happening. She's just going crazy. No one cares. No one's trying to explain anything at all.
All this stuff is going on.
But to be honest, if she kept her nose to her own business, she'd be...
Oh, I know, because she's always looking into their... Can you imagine having somebody that nosy living next door that they're looking in your window all the time?
Coming into your bedroom when you're sick,
They just walk in all the time. They don't even knock in this block. If you notice, they
no
just
one
walk
locks
in.
Their windows or their doors. I mean, I don't know.
I mean,
she seems like someone who would walk into someone's house or walk into someone's window if the door was locked, but the window wasn't. I could see her doing that. I don't think they have screens on their windows.
Gladys is someone who desperately needs satellite.
Something to do.
Cable. She needs cable television. Unfortunately, that wasn't available in her time, but she needed She needed to get hooked on the soap operas during the day. That's what she needed to do. She should be watching more television.
General Hospital, all my kids. Yeah, something.
She definitely couldn't get laid, so she doesn't have that to keep her busy.
I kind of feel sorry for Andrew. Just ignores her, though. That's why she's got too much time on her hands, because her husband doesn't give two diddles.
God forbid. I mean, to be honest, I mean, Darren and Samantha are in a new build. They're the first people to move in this house. Remember, the whole area is being built up. So they moved in there. So basically, you know, Gladys is there watching watching her neighborhood grow around her. God knows what she did when that was happening. What I mean, I guess
like, yeah, like exactly.
That brings us to season 2, episode 10, which is Junior Executive. Samantha wonders what Darren looked like as a child, and Dora changes him into a 10-year-old self, played by Billy Mummy, otherwise known for Lost in Space.
That's what I thought.
Twilight Zone. And Darren is furious. Because of some nasty things Darren says about Endora, she changes him back into a boy right before meeting Mr. Harding, a new client who sells children's toys. Mr. Harding likes the idea of the boy and wants to meet him with Darren and the boy. While Darren is a boy, he runs into some other boys and they tell him why the toys are no good. So, Vicky, what are your thoughts of Junior Executive?
I thought that it was pretty funny how they inserted this kid in here, because he looked just like Darren, you know, right down to the suit. I guess his suits rank with him too. And he's trying to get across He starts talking to those other kids. Well, they're kind of bullying him at first, you know, taking his boat and throwing it over his head, keep away kind
that's
of
totally
thing.
That's totally what kids do, though. Totally
I know, that's what boys do. Boys are sort of like I was home and I let Asher, like, he was swimming with kids he didn't even know, and they were just trying to drown each other and beat the hell out of each other the whole time they were swimming. Did they exchange names? No, but that's just what boys do. And, I really enjoyed the two other kids because they were kind of comical, because they're your typical Dennis the Menace type kind of thing. But I thought it was funny how he was trying to go back and, well, but first you got Agnes Moorhead interfering again and screwing with Darren's life by turning him into a little boy to begin with. You know, I mean, and it just, you just can't win with her. And then, you know, Dick Sargent's the second one, right? The second,
yeah. Darren. Dick York is the first.
I love Dick York probably the best, because he seems to throw the best fits. Now Sargent was fine, but I mean, he was a little more calmer than this Darren. So this Darren gets really upset. But I thought it was funny how the kids were all, you know, he explained the toy doesn't do anything, you know, so he's got to go to this meeting, and this guy wants to talk to this little boy he met, not Darren. So I don't know. It's just one of those typical convoluted situations that get him in trouble all the time. I mean, he does a lot of explaining to do most of his life, it seems. Mansplaining and going to jail.
I think it was this episode that made me realize, I think, that they weren't consistent with the way that they were able to perform magic, maybe, because I might be getting another episode mixed up, but I came to this realization that, because I know in previous episodes they said one witch could not undo another witch's spell, but
yeah,
I'm trying to remember if Samantha
but they kind of do tweak their spells now, like she tries to fix things that her mother did, or that Aunt Clara
Was she tweaking her spell, or did Endora finish it and then Samantha just does the same spell over and over?
Well, she kept doing it.
I know she did that late, but I don't remember if she undid Endora's spell or not, because I might be getting my idea mixed up with another episode that comes next, because I know this came up maybe a couple times. It might be the next episode that I'm actually thinking of, but I'm not sure. Because I don't remember if Samantha undid Endora's spell, or if Endora...
I think Endora undid it behind the scenes. The person that came to McMahon and Tate was so enamored of the little boy that he wanted to see him. And so Samantha had to keep going back and forth, turning him into adult, turning him into, you know...
Yeah, I know she did that. Yeah. Okay.
See, I'm kind of wondering, from what you're saying, Jesse, is I'm kind of wondering that maybe they can't undo a spell if something happens in their head, so there's no incantation. But if there's an incantation, I think you can undo the spell because you need to know the incantation and able to undo the spell.
Right.
Like if I just like snap
my... Yeah, I guess that's true.
Because I think like if I just snap my fingers and I can make something happen, I'm not sure if I cannot undo that spell. But it seems like whenever it's Aunt Clara's spells, but she uses incantations, that they always have to figure out what the incantation is and be able to undo this spell.
Yeah, I remembered that. Yeah, like because I know whenever Aunt Clara performs a spell with words, she usually doesn't remember it because she's older. So whenever Samantha's trying to get remember, she can't undo the spell Clara unless she remembers the words Aunt Clara used. Yeah. So I guess that makes sense. They just didn't really explain that in this one. So I guess I was confused as to how that worked. But I think that's, like I said, I think that's in the next episode. I'll have to remind it when we discuss it. But
then maybe...
Yeah, I don't remember if that one was mother and daughter spell-oriented or not. Maybe?
That if you're like, you know, something happens, your mother's a witch and you're a witch, that maybe you can undo each other's spells because there's a family thing. Who knows? I'm making this up, but it could be, maybe it's possible. It'd be something to be interesting to look at.
Possibly. That's why I wish this wasn't, yeah, I know I take it more seriously than the writers probably did because it's a sitcom. It's supposed to be comedic and not about the world building and concepts and stuff like that. So, but I don't know. I just like to understand magic because it's so fascinating. And they do actually seem to be consistent on this show, despite being a sitcom. So I guess that's why I pay more attention and try to point it out, because they do actually a pretty good job of remaining consistent with the way certain witches are able to perform their magic.
Aren't warlocks supposed to be stronger than the witches?
And overall, aren't what?
Aren't warlocks supposed to be stronger?
Oh, I don't know.
I think they said that. I can't remember what episode it was.
I don't know. But
maybe I'm thinking of Genie and the Blue Gin. Who knows?
I think
it, the Blue Gin.
Oh, that's possible.
I think as far as what I'm finding out so far as witches and warlocks are concerned, from what we've seen so far, it doesn't seem like the warlocks are any stronger than the females, because it seems like they seem to be on par with one another. The next episode that we'll be discussing kind of gives us a bit more information about that, but there doesn't seem to be an ownership, not like in the straight world where man owned woman or anything like this, or the mortal world. It seems like there's more
exactly, which is,
you know, because same thing with like an Endora.
I think that's more like that's more of a Wiccan. I think their belief system is kind of like more Wiccan in nature, because they're more equal. And I know in the Wiccan culture, I guess you could say, they are more equal because there's the representation of the horned god, and then the what is the lady called? Do you know, Vicky?
What is that?
In Wiccan culture, there's Cernunnos, the horned god, and who's the female? The Lady of the Night or something?
No, Diana's the huntress of the forest. I think that it just depends, because everybody has a preference of who they're interested in. But it's usually
but regardless.
Ate, but the three face goddess.
Hecate.
But
that's true. It's the triple goddess. That's what it is. It's the triple goddess and then the horned god, and they both represent kind of like one equal, because they believe that the male and feminine energies should both be equal to one another. So I think that kind of plays into the world of Bewitched, is that they're all equal and they both.
Isn't Bewitched set up basically is that the witches are more evolved socially and more evolved in their ways?
They're like gods almost on this, because they can do anything. You know?
Yeah, but as far as the way that they look at life,
this is actually what I was going to address.
They're more advanced in their views of the way the world is than the
right. They've lived a longer time.
Yeah,
but that's why they are, like Vicky said. And this, I was actually going to address this, because when I was watching, I did realize that they are kind of like gods, because I've been doing a lot of research about like ancient gods from, you know, the Sumerian culture, with like the Anunnaki, and then Greek gods, and just gods from various different places. I've also been watching a lot of Ancient Aliens and all that other fun gibberish. But I realized that after reading some of the more the Greek mythologies more recently, that the witches here, because I've also been trying to figure out, like, in Bewitched, what makes these witches different from, like, a mortal who decides to practice witchcraft? And I think they're descendants of either the gods or, like, demigods or something like that, because they do remind me of, like, the god. Like, when Zeus tries to impregnate women, he usually transforms himself into an animal, but he also has the ability, and so does Athena, have the ability to transform people into animals. And, like, in the story of Arachne, when she has a weaving contest with Athena. Arachne, yes, Athena turns her into a spider to weave for the rest of her life because she was so haughty and to think that she could defeat a goddess.
They always seem to punish the female folk. They were such a bunch of Me Tooers, female goddesses.
And I think Athena actually turned Medusa into the Gorgon.
Yes, she did. No, it wasn't.
Which
Athena?
Was very confusing. I thought
Hera turned her into
it was Hera. Hera.
It was Hera.
But it reminds me of the Greek gods so much. And I do wonder.
It kind of does correlate a little bit because they can do pretty much everything that any of the gods on Xena Warrior Princess could do.
Stories from. Exactly. And so I feel like the witches in Bewitched are either interbred with some of the gods, or they are gods, or they're like,
well, we never get that answer,
gods. I don't know, because I know it would be so fun to kind of establish that, but they also live in like a cloud like dimension. Whenever they have parties, there's always like floating smoke and, you know, trees up in the and stuff, so you do wonder where they go in their witch world. So I feel like it might be some kind of paradise or heaven or something. I don't know. It's so interesting. But I noticed that specifically with these episodes that they kind of do perform like gods from like the old stories.
I also find that's quite interesting with what we also have here with this episode is that basically you get a really good performance by Billy Mungy playing a being able to
you always get good performances from him
and bouncing back and forth playing with the thing is you got him playing like he's playing as he's Darren when he's trying to make the phone call or why not and dealing with things and
oh god, he was so cute. He was really good.
But then you got him playing like when he's hanging upside down with the boys and acting like a boy,
right?
Do that at the same time and be able to switch it back and forth. I mean, that's quite something to see, and I felt, you know, it's a bit like when we saw Maury McCormick do it when she's playing, you know, Little Andorra,
I thought it was kind of cute, though.
No, exactly,
hang upside down, and they goes until we black out and feel faint, because that's what little kids do, you know.
Yeah.
And I think overall, I think it was quite a good little episode. I quite enjoyed it. I smiled through it, sort of thing. I have to sit there and say, though, we are looking at Elizabeth Montgomery's pregnancy coming along quite well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of questionable maternity clothes that she's wearing at the moment that kind of like, and there's a part of it that she's looking a bit tired and rough as well. It's almost like whatever's growing inside her is taking her life force away a little bit. Cause I think there's one where she's basically,
it's not American Horror just, like, Story.
Long and straight sort of thing. And she's wearing, and she's just really tired and drawn. And then of course, you know,
basically like all of Vicky's clothes from Dark Shadows.
Yeah.
Oh, the baggy ones. Well, that's the style back then.
I know. They all were like,
the Vicky Winters that we're seeing in Dark Shadows at the moment. She's pregnant.
Oh, is she pregnant?
Definitely.
Is that why she's going to get off the show soon?
That's the reason why she's behind a lot of sofas and her clothes are a lot baggy.
Well, I was like on episode 618 today. She was still looking skinny.
Yeah, no, she'll be gone next month. So, but
it makes me upset. But whatever.
Makes me upset.
But yeah, I was going to say that her, you could tell that she's really pregnant in this. I mean, yeah, I think this is the first, before you notice it, but this episode, I think you realize how pregnant she really is, sort of thing. I think he's in
her. Well, and then her relatives, her witchy relative pointed out to her. The wife points it out to her husband, has to point it out to him for whatever, because he's oblivious to the fact that she's pregnant. Says, "Oh, you're pregnant!" Ha 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 ha, or whatever, however that goes. Wait, no, that's not this episode. I'm sorry, that's the next one. Sorry, whatever. I totally got that mixed up.
That brings us to season 2, episode 11, Aunt Clara's Old Flame. When Aunt Clara's old boyfriend, Hedley Partridge, played by Charles Ruggles, and this is the second time we see Charles Ruggles, because he was Mr. Caldwell in Caldwell Soup before.
Oh, that's right.
Actually, Charles Ruggles will go off on a little bit tangent here. He's also known for also being in Beverly Hillbillies. He's done this. And he was also in one of the first Oscars.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of thing. And, yeah, but
that's why he looks familiar.
And he's a classic Hollywood actor sort of thing. And he's also one of the voice. He also used to use his voices in the Rocky and Bullwinkle series as well. So, hey.
Oh,
so Aunt Clara's old boyfriend, Henry Partridge, comes for a visit. Aunt Clara fears that he will discover her powers have dimmed with age. Hedley seems as virile and adept in his powers as he was when he was younger. In order to help Aunt Clara, Samantha performs whatever witchcraft Hedley asks of her. It turns out that Hedley's powers are fading as much as Clara's are. This is filmed on August 4th, 1965. It was also remade in season 7 as Samantha's Magic Mirror. So we'll be seeing this plot again when we get to season 7.
Oh, gee.
So,
I didn't have any idea that they did that in the series.
Yeah, they do it quite an often, a lot in Bewitched sort of thing. So, Jesse, what are your thoughts of this episode?
Well, first, I do predict that this is going to be your favorite episode, perhaps, of this block. But I personally thought this one, it was definitely better than the prior episode.
As we know about Aunt Clara, she's going to be around for 2 more seasons. And, of course, she dies in real life,
right?
Unfortunately. And I'm kind of wondering if there was there a scope to actually expand on her character a little bit more, because it sounds like they were building her character up something, but it looks like, but then is, I mean, season 2, not so much, but season 3, we'll notice that there's a little bit of a decline in her. And we're going to see a bit of decline in the original Gladys Kravitz as well, because I don't think that she makes it past season 3 because of her illness.
Which is unfortunate, because it does seem like she's being more active in the show as of right now. Like, she's been, I think, in every single episode. At least as far as the season's concerned. So it does seem like they were trying to build her up as well.
I mean, I thought one good thing about Aunt Clara, what I quite like about this episode as well, is that we now know a bit more about how Andorra feels about Aunt Clara as well, which we kind of knew. So you always kind of get the impression that Andorra kind of tolerates Aunt Clara because she's family. But now we know that Andorra loves Aunt Clara, sort of thing, and will do anything for her. So we do now know that as well. And especially when we see at the end where they're, you know, when Darren's goes, "I smell orange blossoms." And then basically it's like they go in and they're dancing and they look up and there's Andorra floating on the bouncer playing violin sort of thing.
That was a fun scene. I
thought it was kind of cute though, that she turned him into an elephant, and they're both trying to hide the fact that they were getting on in years. And neither one of them could do their, you know, witchcraft as good as they could back in their younger years, which is kind of sweet because, I mean, people, as you get older, you know, things aren't working properly the way they used to. And you know, you're going to slip here and there. And I thought it was kind of cute how he wanted to impress her and she wanted to impress him. And I think little old couples are just darling. I just do. And she is,
I also,
for sure. I think everybody needs to be Clara.
Well, something I also enjoyed was how Aunt Clara talks back to Andorra and tells her to butt out, which is not something she usually does. That's usually something Samantha does. And to see that, I found it very entertaining. And Andorra actually listened. Aunt Clara wanted to talk about, she wanted to talk about him privately, I guess.
I found it quite interesting that I did like when we got Headley coming, is in the house. Gladys knocks on the door, of course, to pick up Sugar again. Opens the door, and he thinks that that's Samantha. I thought that was quite funny. And when Darren comes and goes, that's that. He goes, oh, because I was a bit worried there. I thought that was quite funny when he, I thought that was quite good. We do get Gladys and bring in Abner this time, barging in on this
private. Well, there's a little baby elephant in the living room that was Headley.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't throw that line in. It's like, not to discuss the elephant in the room, but.
Yeah,
cut out. I didn't hear you.
When Aunt Clara's body's like half missing, when she turns Headley into a baby elephant,
and then she has to stand behind the sofa to hide that she's only half a body.
Yeah, and then Abner just happens to walk in. He just not bear. He's not the brightest bulb in the box, is he? Because he's just so complacent. Oh. He doesn't see anything. He's so boring and droll. He just sits around and does absolutely nothing. He's the kind of husband you want to smother in the middle of the night with a pillow.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, Abner's just totally useless. It's like, no wonder she's going crazy. He doesn't pay any attention to Gladys. He doesn't. He's mean to her.
It would be nice to give his character some evolution, especially after. I was saying that it would be nice to give Abner some kind of character evolution, but I know he's just kind of maybe a trope for comedic relief for
the typical husband.
In general. Yeah, but after the episode when they kind of are thinking about getting a divorce and then coming back together, it would have been nice to see some evolution to his character or have him actually realize that Samantha's a witch, or maybe he wouldn't care, versus where Gladys would be totally freaked out or something.
Well, I mean, let's put this in reality. Let's sit there and say that Gladys and Abner are real people, and let's sit there and say that they have the personality traits that they have. If I was Abner, I'd probably either divorce her or ignore her. There would be the two options you have. Because to be honest, I think if I was married to someone like Gladys in real life, if there's a real person like this, is this real life, I don't think I could stay married to that. That would drive me up the freaking wall.
Abner.
Well, the simple fact is she better knows than everyone's business. She's always like, there's always a drama about her. And let's sit there and say, let's face it. I mean, if I saw things going in and out of someone else's house or whatever they were doing, I wouldn't care. I'd be like, fine, as long as they're happy, as long as it doesn't infringe on me. It's a bit like, when we were in lockdown, if the people next door wanted to have a COVID party inviting 150 of their closest friends and all sneeze and cough on each other, I don't care. Just as long as you're not coming to my house and doing it, I don't care.
Right.
But if I lived with someone who basically, let's sit there and say that, Gary or Isaac, spent all their time in the neighbor's business, I couldn't deal with that either. Sort of.
It's sort of like that movie, The Burbs, with Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Yeah. But I mean, in reality, I mean, to live with some, I mean, to think about living with someone who's so involved in
everything's going on in people's
lives, they have nothing really to do with you whatsoever.
She needs a hobby or a job.
Well, so to the simple fact is that she's not even, it's not like she's looking out the window and commenting on it. She's actually going out of her house and going over to that person's house and cementing herself into whatever drama is going on over there.
Oh, I know. She walks right in. She's always got that cup for a cup of sugar. You ever notice that? Especially in these episodes, because she's got almost every episode that we watch, she's got a cup in her hand looking for sugar, even though she doesn't.
Well, now she needs, as often as she's coming over, she needs a better excuse. So she tries the sugar, which is not, no one's that stupid. Like, she needs to come up with something even better than that, because Samantha
she's
gets the troll.
Always looking in their window. It's just like, God.
Well, now she's just waltzing in. Now she's just knocking. She's more now, which is, I don't know. I don't know. There's something about that I like. I would love for this to be like a legitimate I don't know, some kind of more dramatic show. Like now, like if they redid it in like a 50s, 60s style, it would be so cool for them to elaborate on that and have some kind of really cool storyline. Because it's, there's something about that that I like when she's just more braced about coming over. She's on the verge of discovering Samantha. I don't know, something. Even though I thought Samantha told her at one point, didn't she? Or is that later on? I don't even know.
Well, she kind of told her and then made it. And then, because remember, she said
a picture frame.
When she's turning her into a fortune teller.
Was a psychic or something.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. But then again, I mean, okay, let's take
Was that the fortune teller episode, the frames?
Yeah. I mean, let's take the witchcraft out of the situation. Let's just there and say that. Basically, you know, this is real life, and Samantha and Darren have moved into your neighborhood, and let's sit there and say they're not getting along, or for whatever reasons. And basically, you have this next-door neighbor knocking on your door every time you're having an argument with your other half, just so they can put themselves in the middle of your life. I mean, to be honest, I mean, my hats go off to Samantha and Darren to a certain extent. I mean, you know, I know this is fantasy, and it's, you know, about the witchcraft, about her seeing all this stuff, but could you imagine, I mean, if I had a neighbor that came over to my house every time just doing that, I would probably, you know, go to the police and have her sectioned or something and made sure she wasn't allowed 500 feet near me after a while. So you have to give them credit for them to actually put up with that.
So, well, part of it's brought on themselves though, because she's always getting caught in the act of doing something or sneaking something.
Well, little does Vicky know that Jesse and I are actually buying a house across the road from Vicky, and we're going to actually implant ourselves into our lives every time we see something going on in her house.
That's just fine. I don't have enough to keep me occupied.
Jesse, did you see what's going on over there, Jesse?
Oh, also, I noticed when people when people imitate Gladys, they're imitating. But I've noticed that a lot of people who imitate Gladys Kravitz, they're imitating the later Gladys.
Oh, that one.
Because they always say Abner has more of a bump now. Always says Abner with a hard R.
Abner!
You know, she says it like that, whereas the other one has more of the Abna. Yeah, it's totally different. I know that's like, I guess that's
He's
my little...
He's still not a very compelling fellow with the new wife, so. The new one, so.
No. Claire. No, no one
stays the same.
They both did a good job.
And Clara's doorknob fixation still very much prevalent. And I did like when she sat there and said that when, you know, Hedley gives her this great big elaborate gold doorknob, that she said it was better than an engagement ring. So that was quite interesting.
Was that one from Buckingham Palace, or was that a different one? No.
She was standing from Buckingham Palace, and that's why Andorra was a bit worried about her. So I think.
That's what it was. Yes. Yeah, that's what it was. I thought it was, big gold. I mean, that looks like something that would be in Buckingham Palace.
Now, this would be the last appearance that we'll see of Charles Ruggles in Bewitched. After this, he would go on to do Man from U.N.C.L.E., Andy Griffith Show, The Munsters, and Bonanza, and sort of thing. But which is kind of sad, because after I watched this, it would have been quite nice to have him as a reoccurring character popping in. Everyone's like, oh, you know, or whatever. So
no, that's what I was. That's what I was saying earlier. I totally agree.
So that's interesting, because I actually quite like. I like the. I love the Charles Ruggles warlock witch coming into it, because this is the first time that we actually get a warlock who is very mellow, very respective of what's going on around them, and the other ones are likable. Uncle Arthur's likable. Samantha's father's likable. Don't get me wrong, but this one's actually one that actually treated Samantha and Darren with respect and kind of respected their, you know what I
mean? He didn't give him any grief about him being immortal or that she married immortal. I mean, he really was very nice.
Yeah. He acted like he was oblivious of the fact.
And I also quite like, I thought it was quite telling as well. I think this is also, this is where we get a little bit more information about what happens to an aging witch, where we find out that basically they're thrown into an old witch's home. Which doesn't sound very nice, actually.
No.
And obviously when you can no longer walk through walls and you can't do your spells, that's where you're forced to go. Which is, I guess it shows something about the love that Aunt Clara has about her, that her family are not going to let that happen to her. So I thought that was quite lovely, actually, didn't it?
Right.
You know, you had to read between the lines, but we do get that here. So I thought that was quite nice for them to put that in there as well.
Well, she's so sweet. How do you not like her?
You know, that's the funny thing about this is that every time that Aunt Clara has been put into like the weirdest, whether it's with Larry Tate or Darren's parents or whatever thing that she's put into,
She always gets forgiven,
even to the fact where she's thrown in front of a judge and basically being, you know, almost up for what? Child cruelty, wasn't she? And
right, something like that, yeah.
And then she, you know, she's just herself and just, you know, and, you know, they go, oh, no, we need to fight for her. And, you know, they let her talk. And by the time she's finished talking, she turns everyone around to her and everyone just loves her. And that's like, I think that's quite endearing sort of thing. So even though, and I think that's another thing I think that Bewitched does very, very well is that how they show people who are aging. And though they should be the butt of the joke, they're not the butt of the joke. And even though people should be talking down to her like they do with old people, but people don't talk down to Aunt Clara. They accept her for who she is, and they love her who she is, and they let her be who she is. And I think that's quite a good message to have on any kind of television show about how you do with aged people. This brings us to our last episode that we're covering, which is season 2, episode 12, A Strange Little Visitor. Samantha agrees to keep a 10-year-old warlock named Merle Brocken, played by Craig Hudley, overnight, but Merle has promised to not do any magic in front of Darren. Darren finds out that Merle is a warlock. Darren may change his mind about Merle using his witchcraft when a burglar, Tim Herbert, breaks into the house looking to steal the expensive necklace he knows Darren is keeping for Larry. James Doohan and Anne Sargent appear as Merle's parents, and this was filmed July 8th, 1965. So, what are your thoughts about this one?
Well, I kind of got confused on this one a little bit. I may need to go back and rewatch it. How did he know that Darren had that necklace? I must have just turned my head and missed it.
About the burglar.
Yeah.
At
the bar.
When Samantha agreeing to babysit Merle.
Right.
What happens is it's cutting back and forth. And what you get is Darren having drinks with Larry. And Larry said, I bought Louise a necklace, but I can never surprise you because she's nosy and sticks her nose in everyone's face.
Right.
And asked Darren to take care of the necklace. But next to them, there's this guy. And basically, they flip a coin who's going to pay the check. And the coin falls and the guy next to him hides the coin because he's going to steal the coin. But then when he brings the coin forward, basically what happens is he gives him the coin, but notices that about the necklace, and that's the burglar.
Okay, I must have missed that because he just kind of popped. I must have just stepped out of the room or something because he just seems really random, kind of a burglar. He wasn't even a very good burglar. I mean, he was showing his face and just like, you know, everything about him sticks out like a sore thumb, you know?
He reminded me of Bert Lars Kine in The Wiz for some reason. He was very cowardly and like scared of his own shadow. It's like, you can't be scared of everything as a burglar because if you jump from your own mishaps, like how are you going to go into someone's house and steal something without making a ruckus? And as clumsy as he is, I totally don't buy the fact that he managed to tie up both Darren and the boy. Like, that's just, I don't know.
That's because he made the little boy promise that he wasn't going to use witchcraft.
Yeah, you know, this episode...
Still! Like, that's dumb.
I like bits of this episode, but it feels like the burglar thing was kind of tacked on for some reason. It didn't feel like... They feel like two episodes...
Yeah, it does. It feels very last minute.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, I like...
If they had done, like, the Home Alone kind of thing, that would have been interesting.
And I mean, I like the storyline with Merle sort of thing about basically is, like... And I quite like that because what you got was... You know, how are Samantha and Darren going to be as parents? So I like that sort of thing. So you get an idea what Garen's going to be like as a father sort of thing. So we get that, you
right.
know, ball sort of thing, even though he doesn't know that Merle has capabilities. But then we also get, you know,
the way Garen bugged me though.
Was like, eat your meatloaf. Meat, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, oh, you know, don't read at the table and all the other stuff that, you know, that you get a family. So we get, I like that idea because it gives you a little bit of a hint about what Garen and Samantha are going to be like parents. So I like that part of it. And, you know, and the part about not using witchcraft, I actually, you know, that has to basically do not as, you know, maybe Samantha need to be a bit more forthcoming, but then again, but Samantha does explain herself at the beginning saying that, you know, I don't know. I mean, my family's caused a lot of grief to Darren, so I don't know. If, you know what I mean? So I can understand that because, you know, we've seen up to this point, yes, Samantha's family does cause a lot of grief to Darren. Magical, you know.
Oh, they just screw with him constantly, the poor guy. I mean, you know, he must really love his wife. That's all I can say because he tolerates so much. And you would think that they would see this by now, you know?
Sure. But also to say that it's nice that we get Samantha, you know, noticing that, and she's totally aware of it. So I thought that was quite nice in this episode as well. I was like, okay, so she's totally that. But then she decides to, you know, take him. And to be honest, when they first showed up, I thought, when the episode first started, I thought that boy was going to be the one that got adopted out in the Christmas episode last year.
Right.
For a visit, because he's like, oh, I haven't seen you guys for ages. I'm like, oh, this is the little boy.
I kind of felt bad for that kid in that episode last Christmas because he really needed a family and they sent him back.
He got his family, didn't he? He got his family at the end because.
Well, that's right. That was random, though. He just decided to take off. You know, I don't know. That was kind of random. I guess you can only do so much in 23 and a half minutes.
Yeah, the only adoption to take place over Christmas ever in the life of man. But that didn't have to go through the court system. But, you know, so I thought that was him. So when he ended up being totally different people, I kind of, oh, okay, actually this is somebody else sort of thing. But I also quite like, what I also liked about this episode is Merle. Because he was so polite, but in a horrible way that you couldn't really argue with him. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's a bit like when we did the bad scene with Rhoda, you know?
Well, he was kind of a Weisenheimer, but at the same note, he was a very polite Weisenheimer, the kid was. Yeah.
Which makes it very hard to deal with, very hard to correct or have, you know what I mean? And because, you know, it's a bit like, you know, if you're telling someone they're doing something bad and they're kind of like agreeing with you, even though they're not going to do anything about it, it's really kind of hard to get through to that person. And I quite like that about him sort of thing. But then, you know, and even the way that
he acted unaware of the fact.
Yeah. And but even the way that he deals with Gladys.
But well, you know he was aware of what he was doing.
Oh, yeah. He's a little shit.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, but he was very good at it. Subliminal. I can't say the word. Subliminal little shit.
You know? Well, because he was definitely smarter than Darren. Darren doesn't come off as being very smart.
Well, how old is this kid? Like
his... But I don't know. I liked the way. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if Samantha's like a couple thousand years old, is this kid like 500 or 600 years old? In which is years, you know? So he's been around the horn a couple times.
No, right?
More than Darren. So.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, if it takes a mortal 18 years to grow into adulthood, well, let's say 21 years to grow into adulthood, how long does it take for a witch to go into adulthood? How long do you live with your parents for? Do you live with your parents for like 50, 100 years? Before you become an adult? Who knows?
I don't know. Good question.
I did enjoy the way Samantha handled him, though. I didn't really care for the way Darren tried to handle him because Samantha just kind of points out like the facts and the truth of the matter, and Darren just tries to force his way, and I hate that because it's so
patronizing. You just don't like Darren
when people are like that. Some people, no, I don't. But that's like the Darren. Part of the reason why, because he's not only patronizing to this kid, but he's in the beginning especially he was very patronizing to Samantha, like almost constantly, like in the earlier first season. So. Yeah, that's part of the reason why I don't like Darren. It's not that as a whole I don't like him, but there are aspects of him that I really don't like, and I I like when he's more softer, because there are episodes when he's softer and actually very agreeable and fun to watch, but sometimes he just comes off as like, oh, I just wouldn't do it that way. Oh, why can't you be more understanding? But otherwise, I didn't have any other issues with him in this block, actually. It was just that.
To be fair to Darren, though, I had to sit there and say that once he realized that he was a warlock, he did change a little bit towards the way he was dealing with
him. Which warlock?
Well, before,
you know,
he doesn't know that Merle is a warlock at all. He thinks he's a normal boy. And so he acts one way. But I noticed that once he finds out he's a warlock, then he slightly changes. But I sit there and say that the only time Darren really has a go at him, really, is when he's being disrespectful to Samantha, really. You know, by saying that he doesn't like me, like dinner, he's going to ignore her or sass him back to him. He doesn't seem to have too much of a problem when Merle's sassing back to him. It's only when he's disrespecting Samantha, which I find that.
Yes.
So I get, you know, and I guess that's being, you know, the 1960s patriarchal father who basically, you know, you respect your mother, and I guess that's the kind of role sort of thing. But I didn't find him like too over the top. And even when he finds out that Samantha wasn't 100% honest with him, you know, he did take it in stride. There was no fits about witchcraft being used and all the other stuff.
They just randomly dropped this kid off. Because, I mean, were they relatives? Because here they just show up and they just decide to leave their boy. I know that they know them. But, I mean, people just pop into the Stevens' life and you just never see them again.
Well, it's yeah. True. And, but it's like, we haven't seen you in so long. And you're like, oh, this is the first time we've seen you at all. But another thing you're kind of wondering, like, okay, if you're a witch, and let's sit there and say that you have to go to a convention in London or wherever in the world you need to go. Aren't you just able to zap a babysitter from somewhere?
Well, that's what I would think.
You'd think so.
You know, I think, don't we see later, isn't at one point, doesn't Tabitha at one point get Ben Franklin to babysit her or something? Don't we see that at some point or someone like that?
Yeah, something like that. But, you know, it would have been interesting if they pulled like a Twilight Zone with like, I Sing the Body Electric or something, where they get some kind of like weird, I don't know, like an android, like if they just whip something weird like that into thin air, someone who is more programmed to be a babysitter and that was like their only function. Because apparently you can create something from your imagination. It would be fun to see them do something like that sometimes, aside from the playwright episode.
Well, another thing we got Merle is, I mean, God forbid, what a stingy little boy. He doesn't believe in sharing.
No, at all. Then he electrocutes Darren because he turns that hairbrush into a fire truck, and that's how he gets the burglar, though, because he's
going to. I know, but at the same time, I mean, think about him. It's like he's got this toy that he has. Anytime someone touches it, he goes ballistic. It's like,
he has to get,
like, didn't your parents teach you how to share? That's like child rearing 101. Isn't that the first thing you teach your children? How to share their toys, how to share sort of thing? Not like, it's mine, all mine, don't touch it, it's mine. Do you think
that's mine?
What's mine's is mine.
Sort of thing. But I mean, yeah, it does. I mean, it is foreshadowing and it does come to light later on. It's like, oh, what? You know, basically, yeah, he's fine for them to be burgled. And I mean, God forbid, I mean, they could have been shot. I mean, the guy had a gun. They shot them. He's fine with that, just as long as they don't touch his fire truck. Really?
I know. That's why I got frustrated. I thought it was very dumb. I know it's they're trying to be consistent and stuff, but there are times, and I wish that this show was aware of that, that there are times to, you know, go against a promise that you made, especially when it's life or death, but because it was comedic, I guess you could afford that moment, but otherwise, it was just kind of dumb. Like, if it was a real life situation, that's just stupid. Like, logic. It just doesn't make sense to do something like that in real life. And because it's not real life, you do feel kind of, I don't know, it feels like a betrayal of some kind of just intelligence and whatever. Because you know, in real life, you would go against a promise if it meant someone's life. But because it wasn't a serious thing, because the burglary was obviously used, it was a play for laughs. Yeah, it was supposed to make people laugh. So I guess in that way I get it, but still there's something about it that just doesn't, it bugs me. It just irks me a little bit. So
I mean, another thing I find quite bizarre about Bewitched, what we've noticed in the first where we are to going, is that sometimes we get continuing storylines where they do carry storylines through for some reason, and then there are other times that they don't. So it's kind of like, it's kind of a bit off balance sometimes.
Well, you can tell it sometimes that they got more than one writer per episode, because that's like 25-minute episodes, and you can tell distinctive styles like when somebody else is helping to write the episode. You know what I mean?
Well, I think what they do is that like you have your team of writers. You know, like you might have one writer per episode sort of thing. I think that they all work together, and it's like, okay, this is what we're doing sort of thing. Here, I think the writers work in different rooms. You know what I mean? It's like, you work on this episode, you guys work on that episode. I noticed that the Aunt Clara ones are always tend to be written by the same person, though. I have noticed that.
Right?
Always, oh, really?
Yeah.
They okay. Always,
I remember you mentioning that before. I still say that you have to look that up.
Sort of thing.
He writes her with so much heart, though, because she really is quite an endearing character.
But they always seem to be written by Bernade Slade writes all those episodes, the ones of them. And the ones that deal with, like, the real tender family moments and stuff like that. They're always Bernard Slay. He also wrote Junior Executive as well. And he also wrote Takes Two Aspirin and Half a Pint of Porpoise Milk. He wrote that one. And he seems to write all those ones that have like a nice little message in them and stuff like that sort of thing. So, and there does seem to be follow through with Aunt Clara's character. There always seems to be a follow through with those episodes that, you know, you could take all the Aunt Clara ones out basically and put them together and you probably have almost a decent movie. You know, mm-hmm. Aunt Clara movie sort of thing, where some of the other ones are kind of like you're dipping out and very episodic. So, this brings us to our favorite character and our least favorite character of this block. And let's start with Jesse. Who's your favorite character of this block and your least favorite character of this block?
I know. So, especially when you don't have nothing wrong with anything that you don't like.
I know. I mean, I guess I'll just have to say Adora for this one because of this reason. Because that one episode, what is the name of the episode with Billy Mummy in it? Billy Mummy.
Oh, Junior Executive.
Yeah, because I don't know. Even though it was a good episode, if Andorra wasn't in it, it probably would be, I mean, it still kind of is my least favorite, but it would be even more so if Andorra hadn't played a role in it. She kind of saved the episode a little bit for me. So, because it's not my favorite out of this entire block. It's just not my favorite. It was still good, but when you compare it to all the other episodes we watched, I don't think it's as strong as the others. It feels unfair to say that, but it's just...
Which episode are you talking about?
Junior Executive.
I don't know. I thought that was a good episode. I kind of liked all the back and forth. I thought it was, you know... Yeah. I like how Darren always
It's good. It's good, but you know you're going to have to pick a least favorite, and that is probably going to be mine, at least as far as I...
Well, yeah,
that's how I feel right now. It's I know, and Dora is my favorite character because of that. She saved the episode for me.
And I guess you hate Darren.
No, not necessarily.
We can blame it on the burglar. He had a short fur.
Yeah, probably the burglar. Yeah, yeah. He did kind of feel like he was thrown in, like Keith said earlier, tagged on or whatever. So yeah, probably because I just I felt like that aspect also kind of ruined the episode for me. It felt like it interrupted a flow of some kind. Because the episode was good overall, like that episode with Merle. But then when you throw in the burglary, it just kind of throws a wrench in whatever they were doing with the episode. And I didn't like that. So yeah, he definitely is my least favorite because he ruined that for me.
That was kind of chaotic.
Who's your favorite character and least favorite character?
Oh, favorite character. I'm going to have to go to the little boy from Lost in Space. I really enjoyed his character.
Billy Mummy?
Yeah, because he was just, I don't know, you know, then he decided, you know, he was going to act like, you know, a typical little boy and starts hosing them down with the squirt gun and stuff.
That was a good scene.
He was really good at the back and forth. I used to enjoy him in Lost in Space, you know. I mean, I thought that was a cool show too back in the day. And I don't know, wonder what happened to him. Does he wonder if he's still alive?
He's still alive. He doesn't look as good as he did when he was a kid, but he's still alive.
None of us do, darling. None of us do.
You just don't know unless you look at pictures. I'm sorry, Billy Mummy. I'm sorry if you ever come on the show. You should delete that. It's fine.
I just realized.
No, don't invite him on the show. I was going to suggest if he's still alive, invite him on the show, but not.
Not after the insults maybe not, you just maybe dealt out to someone.
If you decide to get rid of these comments.
No, I'm going to keep those comments. I'm going to actually tag you next to him. So
God, they're like David Selby that one time saying, "You thought I was dead."
I actually didn't. I've been following Dark Shadows for a lot longer, so.
He goes, I knew he was still alive. No, I thought that
I've been wanting to go to a Dark Shadows convention.
I thought the little boys.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, the little boys are really strong characters. I thought it was refreshing to see young kids in there, you know, and just doing what they do. And, you know, like how the kid handled the burglar.
I wish kid actors were just as good now.
Huh? I just thought the kids were funny because how
actors were just as good now. I feel like there's an inconsistency.
And I can't really say I have a character I really don't like. You know, it's got to probably be Larry Tate because he just rubs me the wrong way because he's such a two-faced fair weather friend kind of guy. You know, Larry's just out for himself, you know, and he thinks that Darren is just his buddy, but he's really a chiseler, you know. He's basically out for himself, but
oh.
I mean that's But I mean, I
yeah,
but I
especially.
Mean, yeah, he's kind of, you know. But I mean, I
especially
I like
in this that. One because
that little boy, he was, you know, you got to have him here. He's always sticking it to Darren. Darren's always got.
Well, he was also
extra mile for him.
Didn't he kind of threaten Darren in one of these episodes too, with his job?
Kind of, sort of. He's always threatening him, kind of, sort of, you know, because, they want this account, you know. And is it, was
yeah,
this,
it makes
this,
you realize
was,
that they're not
This was also
friends.
The one with the guy when they were, when the suit, right? The suit kept disappearing.
Yeah.
This block. And so, you know,
Aaron's
running around the car. I got a kick out of that. I just like the Aunt Clara ones because she's just so sweet. It's hard to really single anybody out sometimes when you're happy with every episode you just watched. What about you, Keith?
My favorite character is Hedley Partridge, played by Charles Ruggles. I think it's a fan. I thought the way he portrayed his character with such empathy and such feeling and such a politeness and such a suave way of doing it. And you really, you know, and I like the way that he was able to persuade that he thought they're playing this trick about, you know, that he still has his abilities and stuff like this. And the way that, and even when it comes to the realization that he no longer has his, you know, his gifts as, you know, the warlock anymore.
He wasn't going to let on either, though.
No, but the thing is to be honest, is the way that he presents his, this way that he presents character, the way he acted that character, the way the character is presented. And when it all comes to the fore and stuff like that, and the way that it all plays out, I thought he was very strong and I loved him. And I had to sit there and say, I left that episode wanting to see him be part of coming back more and more and more again. I wanted more and more of him. I would like to see more and more of him.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun. Sort of like that little old guy in Dark Shadows that never came back. Yeah.
And I love the way, you know, I love the interchanging between him and the interchanging that we get between him and Darren and him and Samantha and all of it is just, I worked really well for me. And that's what I loved about that. My least favorite is the burglar. I think that if you're going to have a burglar and you're going to throw something into the mix, I think that the way
that
they
look like a burglar.
He doesn't need to wear, you know, the black mask and the white and black shirt. But I do think what they could have done, it would have been better if they made him like an ethnic stereotype, maybe like very Italian mafia type or something like that, to give him like a very, but you know, something to give you a very, because to be honest, because this character is not very well developed, but if you gave him very, like a very, very strong, you know, strong characterization as far as like the way he spoke and or something, there would have been a threat. But it's kind of like he breaks in and there's not that threat, and you need that threat there to feel, so that way when everything pans out at the end, that way you feel like there's a bit of a payoff. And there's not that threat.
You resolve.
Yeah, it's kind of like the nerd down the street who's never seen daylight for the last 12 years because he's all behind his computer screen breaks into your house to steal something. And it kind of felt like that. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, well, you know, basically I could just kick you and basically you just be down in a second flat. There's like nothing to you. You know, so I just think that maybe it was a bit more heftier or a bit more stronger or more brawner or a bit more, you know, I don't know, a bit more stronger ethnically. I don't know, strong Irish or strong whatever. It would have painted more of a picture for someone with such a little part. And so therefore, when this character did break into your part, then maybe you would feel a bit something more than this. This day player breaking into your house is what it felt like. A day player who really had no character. I can't remember what this guy looks like. Let's put it that way.
I can. He was shifty looking. He was pretty sketch.
Yeah. To me, you just need to be more shifty. So
he did kind of remind me of the reptilian.
Sleestak?
Rick Clumsy.
The Sleestak.
You know, I would have even more preferred if he looked like Boris from Bullwinkle and Rocky, or even if you look more like Natasha. So. I'm gonna get you moose. So let's talk about our favorite episode and our least favorite episode out of this block. Vicky, what's your favorite episode of this block and your least favorite episode of this block?
Okay, my favorite episode in this block would probably be my aunt. Why am I having? I'm having a friggin' brain fart. Aunt Clara with her little old boyfriend, because I thought it was sweet. I think little old people together are just so sweet, and they were so cute together. And it was really heartfelt and sincere episode, really. Mm-hmm. And my least favorite, and I hate to say pick out a least favorite because I really kind of enjoyed all four or five of these, was probably be the burglar one, because that one kind of was a little all over the place, kind of, sort of.
Thanks, love is there.
But I enjoyed it. It wasn't my favorite one, though.
Now, Jess, what's your favorite episode and your least favorite episode?
Well, I'll start with my least favorite since that's what I'm certain of. And that's probably the junior executive one, just because reasons I mentioned earlier. And my favorite, let me think. The first one was, what was the first one again?
The soup?
The first one that we did was, and then I wrote.
Okay, yeah, the Civil War guy.
Oh, maybe that one's my favorite.
That was a good one, too.
Yeah, that was good.
My favorite has to be Aunt Clara's Old Flame, only because I quite like, I like the ones that kind of tear at my heart and make me smile and everything like that.
I know.
I'm a sucker for those anyway. So that, I mean, I'm always going to fall in that category. The question is, when we expand to 8 episodes, we might get 2 of these in a block, and then that might test me a bit more. My least favorite has to be, unfortunately, A Strange Little Visitor. I like aspects of it. I like the Merle being an Warlock, and I like that aspect of it. It's the payoff wasn't that good for me, and it would have been nicer to, I think that they could have been a bit more clever than trying to throw something in there. And it felt a little bit, everything seemed,
it was a little random.
Yeah, just felt that everything was too sandwiched together to make it work, and for that reason it didn't work for me. So
yeah, definitely.
So that brings us to the end of Bewitched, season 2, episodes 8 through 12. Next month, we'll be expanding to 8 episodes for each of our episodes of Bewitched that we'll be doing. And we'll be going from episode 13 to episode 20 in season 2. Now, of course, this is the end of season 4 for the Literary License Podcast. We'll be doing season 5. But to finish off our season 4, our 2-for-1 Nature vs. Man, the Godzilla from 1954 and Godzilla from 2014. Also, we'll be finishing up our Dark Shadows, which will also be expanding into a double episodes starting in season 5. Season 5, our classic novels will no longer be classic novels, but Kings of Horror will be starting off that season with a new co-host, and that will be called Dead Zone by Stephen King, and Dead Zone directed by David Cronenberg. And of course, next month when we start season 5, we'll no longer be Nature versus Man, but the 80s, which are horror films, will be Scanners from 1981 and Videodrome from 1983, both directed by David Cronenberg. So for me, it's good night, and good night, Vicky.
Good night, everybody. Take care of each other.
Good night, Jesse.
Good night, all.
And we'll see you next week for the end of our Nature versus Man with Godzilla from 1954 and Godzilla from 2014. Sorry.
Yep. That's the end. Next week.
Sitting at the table tonight, you look so beautiful in the candlelight. And looking at her, looking at him after 50 years, I pictured you. Adventure and full of fear, and looking at her, looking at him, made it seem so easy. You're looking natural in my eyes. We found life's wonderful surprise, and someday they were us. Perfect love exists, I've seen it for myself. It's not kisses or moonlight serenades, it's two people holding on to happiness before it fades. Cannot be here without you, darling. What's this heart supposed to do? It's suddenly here, crystal clear. You are the one. I picture flowers in me dressed in white. They were right.